today. U.S. versus Delgado, 12-2478. Were you corner appointed, counsel?
I was, Your
Honor. Oh, okay, because I didn't see that on the note. Well, we thank you for your service. Thank you. Mr. Bugney?
Yes.
Are you corner appointed?
Court
appointed as well?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I don't know why it's not noted on my sheet.
May it please the Court. The government has two principal arguments to try to clear the burden of establishing exigent circumstances in this case. Everything's tied into whether or not there is someone else in the apartment when the officers go there and what proof they have. The facts are set. There was no evidentiary hearing. The government never requested one. So what we have is the same record that the magistrate judge looked at and so did the district court. Both of them said the record was devoid of the facts necessary for the officers to have a reasonable belief that there was someone upstairs who needed medical assistance or who may be armed and dangerous. Now, the government tries to overcome that lack of facts by reading in there what might have been the officers' thoughts, what was the skepticism that they could have had, and what was the lack of cooperation that my client and Mr. Avelli's may have shown to the officers.
Would you describe the entrance? I'm a little confused about the entrance to the upstairs apartment.
Yes, Your Honor. It's in the back of a bar. There's a parking lot, and then it has that jettisoning out stairwell that's common in the Midwest, a door at the end of that stairwell that would then lead up to the apartment, going through, and then the apartment is right there.
Was the door, street-level door, locked?
We don't know.
Well,
I'm
curious about where they encountered the people leaving.
Yes, Your Honor. It would be at the street-level door, and the district court makes that finding, I believe, in page 3, which would be in of the record. So the officers knocked at the door. At the point that the officers knocked at the door, it's worthwhile to note that Podolsnik had seen Mr. Delgado enter into the building. Before he goes and chases in hot pursuit of what he might think is someone with a gun, he's stopped by Ms. Perez. Ms. Perez tells him that her cousin has been shot. He knows there's been a shooting, so it makes sense that someone has been shot. She identifies who the suspect is. Says a black male who lives two houses away from her. Now, he's asked, how do you know this? My cousin called and told me that. So already we know that Mr. Avelli's is upstairs, that Ms. Perez is his cousin, and that there's been a telephone call made. All right? But there's no fact there that, hey, also the shooter is upstairs with us. You know, Mr. Avelius has provided Ms. Perez with the pertinent details that he's been shot, where he is, and right now that she's getting help for him. But the fact that the armed and dangerous man who the government says could have likely chased Delgado and Avelius back into the house, that fact has been left out of the calculus. Nobody ever mentions that. Ms. Perez doesn't mention that. It seems like a natural thing that somebody might want to say that there's somebody trying to kill me. Beyond that natural fact, when Avelis walks out, and so does Delgado, they're cooperative. When they knock at the door, the officers don't have to barge in to get them out. They come out. When they're outside, they ask Delgado his name. He identifies himself. He says, I'm Luis Delgado. When they ask him, who lives there, he says, I'm the sole occupant. Now, did my client say occupant? I doubt it. He probably said, I'm the only person who lives there. But he's cooperative. He's answering their questions. So there's nothing in the record that would say the officers then had the healthy skepticism. They had to then think these people were lying. And that's what is a fatal flaw in the government's argument. That's what they can't use to try to bridge that gap. Now, this court in Arch, I believe it's footnote 3 in Arch, says, hey, we're not going to let an inchoate hunch get you through the door, whether it be at a hotel or an apartment or a house. You have to have concrete facts. Here, the concrete facts weren't there. There are no concrete facts that would allow the officers to enter, to believe that there was somebody upstairs, somebody needed medical assistance, or that there was somebody upstairs who was armed and dangerous, such that they had to respond to. And without those facts, without that fact to breach really the gap, which would allow them to have a reasonable, objectively reasonable basis to believe that, then this court must agree with the district court and the magistrate and find that the record's devoid.
Now, the magistrate judge concluded that there was no evidence of exigent circumstances. Is that what he always said? So he would obviously rule in favor of your client. Then the district court gets a hold of it and says, well, he thought it was a protective sweep.
Yes, Your Honor.
And now the U.S. attorney is saying, well, magistrate judge was wrong, the district court was wrong, we agree it's not a protective sweep. Instead, there are exigent circumstances. Is that the sequence we have?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And then I guess the one question I have then is, I'll have to ask the other side just really, but what would the officers expect to find when they went in there? What was their exigent circumstance or protective sweep or whatever for entry?
Well, in their brief, they say they were looking for somebody else who was injured, or they were looking for somebody who was armed and dangerous. And I believe page 12 of their brief.
Were they looking for the shooter?
That's what they say, yes.
And they're going to go in where the shooter is?
Yes, Your Honor.
The police?
Yes. They believe that the shooter was upstairs, yet everybody had omitted that pretty pertinent detail from every description of the events.
I'll ask this. They're going to go in where the shooter is, who apparently tried to kill someone.
Yes.
And the cops are going to go in and confront him?
That's what their argument is.
Okay.
And they're saying the shooter chased the victim into Delgado's apartment.
Yes.
Specifically.
And yet it's worth noting that they see Delgado run, and they don't see the shooter following behind Delgado. You know, there's no evidence that Podolsnik sees the shooter go in there. You know, they know it's an African-American male. So just the idea that the shooter would be up there, I think I make it pretty forcefully in my initial brief. It's, you know, the district court said to avoid the cold, he would then chase them inside. But nobody ever says, hey, the shooter's here. You know, when they're exiting the building, they're all like, hey, officers, great, you're here. He's upstairs. You know, or Miss Perez isn't like, you know, like, he's in there. So they're like, hey, my cousin's been shot. You know, go take care of it. And nobody, you know, exits screaming. Nobody does anything.
Mr. Bargain, I got to tell you, I'm, I guess, inclined to give a fair amount of leeway to police officers confronting a confusing and potentially dangerous situation. My concern here is I don't have anything from the police officers in the record. From your view, would it be appropriate to remand this for an evidentiary hearing?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. No evidentiary hearing was asked for by the government before the magistrate and the district court. My client's sitting in prison still on this. The burden is upon the government. It's always been upon the government. Venters, every exigent circumstance case in this circuit has said the government bears the burden. The government didn't meet its burden, and so now before the appellate court to say, hey, really give us our chance now. We really want to do it right now. I think that would be inappropriate. If there are no other questions, I'll...
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bugney. Mr. Ingraham.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Stephen Ingram. I'm an assistant United States attorney from the Eastern District of Wisconsin. I also represented the United States in this case in the district court. And I do respectfully ask this court to affirm the district court's denial of the defendant's motion to suppress evidence. At the time of entry, the police exercised prudent judgment based on what they knew at the time, amid what the district court called, and I quote here from the district court's opinion, an urban shootout in which the location of the firearm and the location of the person who had allegedly fired the gun were not completely known, close quote. Now, the district court...
How can we affirm on an exigent circumstance theory when there's no evidence?
I believe there is evidence, Your Honor. There's the evidence of the fact of this urban shootout.
I'm looking for an affidavit or testimony from police officers about what they saw, what they knew, and what they thought.
There were undisputed facts that were part of the record, and the police indicated, as our brief says on page 6, officers entered the apartment and did a protective sweep for any injured people or shooters inside. That's what the police were concerned about.
And how is that undisputed?
It's undisputed because the defendant did not dispute that and did not seek to have a hearing about it.
Why didn't you submit an affidavit?
I didn't see a need to when
you have the burden of proof.
We submitted facts which were not disputed, Your Honor, and so I didn't see that there was a need for further
So we don't have any victim telling the police officers, you know, the shooter's upstairs, or that says anything about being chased. None of that's in the record.
No, Your Honor. We have the police coming to a chaotic scene where they're not sure of what has unfolded before they got there. They have a concern that there's a man who comes out of the apartment that they thought was seen holding a gun at his waistband. He doesn't. When that man comes out of the apartment,
Let's go to that specific point. Thought he had a gun in his waistband.
Yes.
Where does that appear in the record?
It's in the undisputed facts, Your Honor.
In your response, what I see is when Officer Podlesnik got to the area, he saw a Hispanic male holding his left waistband run from the alley area where the shots were reportedly fired.
It's true. The inference is that he is holding a firearm there.
Okay. Now, maybe. But there's no affidavit from the officer to that effect. There's no testimony about that. And you've got the burden of proof to justify an entry without a warrant.
Your Honor, the cases from the circuit indicate, and particularly in cases such as this, where the police come upon a crime in progress.
I am perfectly willing to indulge police in a... I don't want to second-guess them very much, okay? We're sort of in the business of second-guessing district courts, however, where the issue is whether burdens of proof have been met.
Your Honor, because the facts were not disputed, we did not seek a hearing. I did not seek a hearing because I thought that the ready inference to be drawn from an officer seeing in a scene where there's a shooting, seeing a man running holding a waistband, the ready inference to be drawn from that, based on the officer's experience, is he thinks that person's got a firearm.
And I feel much more confident about that if that inference had been there, at the very least, in your lawyer's summary of what you think the facts were. So that at least it's on the table for the defense to try to dispute. This is almost sort of like summary judgment, right? But without any affidavits, even.
Your Honor, because the facts were undisputed and they seemed adequate, I didn't supplement the facts as we had them.
Right, and after you got the magistrate judge's report and recommendation, you didn't do any supplementation then because you were put on notice then there were real problems.
Your Honor, I should have supplemented.
Was it a fact that when Delgado came out, the officer recognized him?
Yes.
As the person that was running holding his hip?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I have two questions. One is, the guy, Delgado, didn't have a gun when he came out.
That's
right?
Correct, yes.
So maybe they suspected he left that gun up in his room.
That is an inference, assuming that the officer believed that he was carrying a gun when he saw him.
But I'm talking about exigent circumstances.
I'm sorry?
Because that's what you're saying. They're exigent circumstances.
Yes.
The other question I have, and this is where we have a problem without having something from the officers, would they really go up there when they think the shooter who tried to kill someone is in there with a gun and they're going to go in?
Well, Your Honor, what the officer said...
He said protective search, or maybe there's somebody hurt.
Yes.
Or maybe the shooter's in there.
Right. Shooter, or believe they use the term plural shooters. I think what the officers didn't know was was there one shooter? Were there two shooters? There were all kinds of things they didn't know, and I think that adds to the exigency.
But I guess I'm just looking from a practical standpoint, from an officer's point of view. When they the two guys they saw, you got the wounded guy and you got the owner, or whatever, the guy they thought was carrying a gun. They're both outside. One's handcuffed in the car, and the other one's going in. The officers are now going. First of all, this was at ground floor where they encountered him. Now they're going to go up the stairs, apparently, to the next door. And then go in. Is that right?
Yes.
And then, what if the shooter is there?
Well,
they get in a gunfight?
Well, it was the officer's judgment that it was better to confront the shooter there than be vulnerable.
You didn't go anywhere.
Vulnerable to the shooter in a potential ambush situation.
He's trapped.
Well, he's.
But the only thing, I guess, the only thing I'm looking for is a gun.
No, the officer's statement in their report is, and it's part of the facts, is that they were looking for either an injured person or shooters, plural, so that one or more possible shooters. So yes, there's the chance they'll be confronting somebody with a firearm who's ready to shoot, but they would have deemed that preferable to being vulnerable to an ambush if they didn't confront such a person.
An ambush?
Yeah.
Somewhere else, you mean?
Well,
I just maybe you just don't know. I that just seems perplexing to me when you've got the two people outside, one the wounded person and one the officers thought was holding the hip and maybe had a gun, but they have one now.
But there
and
was
then
a,
the question is, what's left in the apartment? There's
well,
only one exit, or maybe I'm wrong. Is there another exit?
No, to my knowledge, no, Your Honor, but they did believe there was a third person, at least one additional person involved, who had actually fired the shot that wounded the person that they knew had been hit by gunfire. And
the guy that just left the apartment.
I'm sorry?
The guy that just, what's his name?
Yes, the man with the graze wound.
Who just came out of the apartment, so he's
correct.
The wounded guy.
Right.
So the possibility is the guy that shot him is up there?
Yes, that was one of the concerns. And so,
but they didn't say so.
No, they did say so. Officers entered the apartment and did a protective sweep for any injured people or shooters
inside.
No, that's
what the officer said. The guy that got wounded didn't say the guy shot him. He's in the apartment.
No, he didn't say that, but the officers didn't have to assume that just because the wounded person didn't tell them the information that it wasn't so.
But let me make sure I have the sequencing right. So Aviles comes outside. They notice he has a graze wound. And then he's followed by Delgado. And but Alviles is not asked if anybody's up there. Delgado is not asked if anybody's up there. Delgado just says he's a sole resident or he lives there, right? And the officer recognizes him as the man he saw running earlier.
Right.
And so nothing by either of them about who's in the apartment.
That's correct, Your Honor. But a point that. The police, in a situation like this, the police don't have to rely on what the people involved in something like this tell them, either.
Well, we don't have any evidence one way or another, because we don't even know if they asked. Based on this, it wasn't like a situation where they said, is there anybody else up there? They said no, then they made the judgment on the street. I don't believe, I can't believe you, and so I'm going to go up and check anyway.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's missing. Your Honors, unless there are any further questions, I'll rest on my brief. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bugney, how much? 2 minutes?
I'd just like to address two small points. One, Mr. Delgado never had a firearm. No, pistol was ever recovered in the apartment. Four muskets were recovered and two shotguns. So there was no, pistol with him running with that.
Muskets?
Yes, Your Honor. Muskets.
Like muzzle-loading muskets?
Yes. Like throw it down, Civil War. Yeah. Okay. Yes, Your Honor. They were muskets. The other point was going back to if there was a firearm, this is a perfect opportunity to either seek consent or to get a warrant. If there is evidence that you need there, you're not going anywhere, as Your Honor said. The scene is secured. This is the perfect time right now to do what officers do. And the idea that just because there was a firearm, that argument was raised in the district court, and district court rejected it, saying, look, this court in Huddleston said, there's a firearm, but that firearm was connected to a known person who was passed out on the couch. You don't have that there. Just a freestanding firearm alone is not enough. So unless there are any further questions, I would ask that this court join the district court and magistrate in finding that the record's devoid of all facts that would allow for officers to enter the apartment.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments. We'll take the case under advisement, and court will be in recess.